On a brilliant white background, a line of fuzzy black letters comes into focus. Alcon Entertainment presents a Whit Thomas Section 8 production. Al Pacino. Robin Williams. Hilary Swank. A blood-red stain slowly spreads through the fibres of some knitted white wool. White letters appear over the darkening stain. Insomnia. Seen from above, jagged ice shapes stab into the air, split by deep crevasses. Many of the white peaks carry stains of grey and black, and cracks in the ice reveal the milky opal-blue interior. The ice field fades to white. Maura Tierney. Martin Donovan, Nikki Catt, Paul Dooley, Jonathan Jackson, Larry Holden, Catherine Isabel. The background of the blood-red liquid seeping through the white wall alternates with the ice field. Casting by Marcy Leeroff, co-producer Emma Thomas. Executive producers George Clooney, Steven Soderbergh, Tony Thomas, Kim Roth, and Charles J.D. Schlissel. Music by David Julian. Editor, Dodie Dawn ACE. Production designed by Nathan Crowley. Director of photography, Wally Pfister. Produced by Paul Youngerwit, Edward L. McDonnell, Broderick Johnson, Andrew A. Kosov. Screenplay by Hilary Seitz. Directed by Christopher Nolan. Red liquid drips onto white cotton. A man wearing white rubber surgical gloves sits in front of a dressing table, rubbing the red stain into white cotton with his thumb. A man's heavy-lidded eyes look down at a black and white picture of a girl's battered face, the picture shaking. The man looks sideways out of a window at the ice field hundreds of feet below. The small seaplane flies on above the ice. A long scar runs down the left side of the man's neck and throat. He glances at a younger man beside him who's reading a paper. A headline reads, "Robbery Homicide Section Faces Deeper Investigation." The older man turns back to the photos of the young woman, naked and apparently dead. The plane turns gently to the left, losing height. Nothing is visible below save the jagged white, grey and blue ice. The plane skims over the ice field now with a dark mountain looming beyond and turns again to cross the steep flank of the mountain where grey rocks show between green trees and scrub. The plane levels out, flying above tall pine trees and into a thin mist rising from them. The mist gradually thickens. The younger man peers out of the side window, then turns to the older man.
But there's just nothing down there. Nothing. I haven't seen a building in like 20 minutes.
The older man glances up from the photos.
Look at that.
We're not on vacation half, remember?
Cheer up, will you?
Tell that to her, partner.
The pilot looks back at them.
Better hang on, guys. It's gonna get rough again.
There goes my lunch.
The plane lurches slightly, dropping low over a lake and heading to the far shore, where at the bottom of a dark mountain a few columns of smoke rise into the grey sky. A slim young woman with shoulder-length auburn hair walks briskly along a jetty by the lake. She wears a police badge on her fur-lined leather jacket. The woman watches the plane touch down on the lake and taxi slowly to the jetty. She trots out onto the landing stage, ducking under the wing of the plane to reach the door as the pilot opens it, and the younger man steps out.
Detective Eckhart, I'm Detective Ellie Burr.
Oh, hi.
Nice to meet you here. Let me help.
How you doing?
Good, good.
Halibut fishing capital of the world.
Okay.
Detective Dormer, it's such an honor to meet you. I'm Detective Ellie Burr. Welcome to Night Mute. Got the car right here.
A big grey four-wheel drive vehicle swings out onto a narrow road, with logs and heavy moving equipment on one side, and deep puddles on the other. Detective Dormer looks out through the rain-spattered window.
It's so incredible to be working with you, Detective Dormer. I've followed
all of your cases, Theodore Dinelli, Frank Prudhomme, the Ocean Park shootings, and especially the Leland Street murders. Is that where Ronald Langley cut you in the basement of 325 Leland Street?
You certainly did your homework, Detective.
The Leland Street murders was my case study at the Academy. So I'm gonna just take you guys over to the lodge and
no,
drop
just
your
take
bag.
Us to the station.
Right. We need to get started. Most homicides are solved by work done in the first 72 hours.
Well, it's 48 hours. We're a day behind. But who's counting?
They exchange smiles. The car pulls up in front of a low concrete police building. Inside, Ellie leads the way into the office of an overweight cop with thinning gray hair, Dormer right behind her.
Yeah, come here. We got you behind a desk, huh? Charlie hey, Bubbles. How
I'll
you doing?
Dead, man. I haven't seen you boys since, well,
nature.
I don't know, 7 years?
8 years.
7 years? I am old. Ellie, get everyone in the bullpen. I'm going to show you off.
Nice kid.
Yeah, loves the job. You know, when I called Buck for advice on this, I never actually expected to send you guys up here.
Something about that bullshit you got going on down there with internal affairs?
They're moving in, Charlie.
Oh, come on, man. It's nothing. It's the usual crap. Buck just figured you could use some help.
They got Finn and Kenter on narcotics theft, Corelli on a bad shooting. Now the fuckers are wading through files looking for headlines, but...
Yeah, it's gonna blow over.
Got a message here from a guy named Warfield.
Aye, he's Pitbull.
He wants to be posted on your movements. I think you'll find it's a bit more straightforward up here. Good guys, bad guys, but a lot less public relations. It's simple.
Charlie picks up a file from his desk.
Except for this.
They walk into a bigger office.
Okay, listen up. Detectives Dormer and Eckhart on loan from Buck Lungard, Los Angeles robbery and homicide. They'll be helping us with the Connell case.
Helping?
We're damn lucky to have them. Anything they want to see, you show them. Any place they want to go, you take them. This is Detective Fred Duggar. He's been heading up the investigation.
Well, hello, Fred.
Hey, pleasure. Nice to meet you.
We'll get right on it.
All right. You seen what we got?
Yeah. I want to start with the body.
You got the report, right?
No, I want to see the body for myself.
Okay.
In the morgue.
Clear cause of death was herniation of the brainstem due to intracerebral hemorrhage.
Beaten to death.
Base contusions?
Superficial. Most of the trauma was to her face and the top of her neck.
Flashback, a hand grabs the girl's throat.
Any signs of rape?
No.
This one covers an older bruise.
There's an older one here, too.
They're both in the report.
He washed her hair.
In flashback, a hand rinses water through the dead girl's hair. Dormer gives a slight shake of the head and picks up the girl's hand.
Scrubbed her nails.
It's all in the report, Detective.
Doesn't say in the report that he clipped him, too.
She could have clipped him herself.
No. No polish on the ends of the nails. See? She painted him herself. Someone else. Cut him shorter. Toes, too.
Scissors clip the painted nails.
Naked when you found her?
Yeah. Last seen wearing a red paisley dress.
No fibers, flakes, hairs?
We know of a forensics work up here. I told you, body gave us nothing.
Oh, she gave us plenty. All this trouble, all this care. Why?
Dormer looks at the other's eyebrows raised.
He knew her.
He knows we can connect him to her.
This isn't some random psycho crime of passion?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe. But whatever happened, his reaction to it wasn't passion. He didn't panic. Didn't chop her up or burn her beyond recognition. He just thought about what we would be looking for. And then calmly removed all those traces. No haste. No rush.
Why would he clip the nails after scrubbing them?
Yeah, manipulating the body. Prolonging the moment.
No mutilation.
Dormer stares down at the body.
Not this time.
You think there's been others?
No.
Dormer pulls off his surgical gloves.
But there's gonna be. This guy, he crossed the line, and he didn't even blink. You don't come back from that. Okay.
Dormer strokes the girl's hair.
Let's go find out who Kay was.
In a timber house, a sad-faced woman leads Dormer to a closed door.
Fred said not to touch anything, so I haven't tidied up yet. She hates it when I go into her room anyway.
She avoids Dormer's eyes.
Thank you, Miss Connell.
Dormer walks slowly into the bright and cheerful room. Eckhart, Ellie Burr, and Duggar follow him in and look around, curious and unhurried.
So she went to a party Friday night?
Not exactly a party. It's a local dive where the kids hang out.
No diary, huh?
We didn't find one, but her mom did say that she keeps a journal.
Friend said she argued with her boyfriend Friday. But she stormed off just after midnight.
Dormer stares at a photo torn in half.
She did, huh? This is interesting.
Eckhart turns and watches Dormer searching a wastebasket. He picks up another piece of photo and matches the two halves. Kay and another girl smiling at the camera. He shows them to Ellie.
Who is this?
Tanya Frankie, Kay's best friend.
I want to talk to her. Who is Kay Connell? Who is she? She popular or is she a loner? Did she like this town? She won a boat first chance she got? Did she have dreams? She knew this guy. We know her. Maybe we can know him. This is designer. This is expensive.
He pulls a dress from a clothes rail.
The boyfriend, Randy.
Randy Stetz.
He could afford this?
He's still in high school.
Well, her mother didn't buy it.
What are we thinking?
Oh, I don't know. Stepfather? Rich uncles?
No.
Eckhart holds up a silver heart-shaped locket.
An admirer.
Dormer dangles the locket on its chain.
Yeah.
In flashback, Kay plays with it.
All right, I want to talk to the boyfriend.
I can get him to the station.
No. I want to go to the school where he is in his class, pull him out in front of his friends. Catch him off guard. I want to, you know, get people talking. So how far away is the school?
Dugar looks down, grinning. He glances at Ellie, who smiles.
It's 10 o'clock, Detective Dormer.
You bet.
At night.
Oh. So when does it get dark around here?
It doesn't. Not this time of year.
Dormer looks at the bright sunshine outside.
Yeah, I heard about that. How come you didn't know that, Hap?
Hap smiles wryly as he follows Dormer out. The four-wheel drive pulls away. Dormer and Hap carry their bags to a motel reception desk.
Lower 48.
Lower 48?
Not from here. I can tell by your walk.
How's that?
Unsure.
Huh.
Dormer and Eckhart, we have a reservation.
Don't be fooled by my friend's frivolous demeanor. Inside, he's all business.
The dark-haired 30-something woman at the desk smiles.
The restaurant's still serving?
Yeah, kitchen's about to close, though.
Oh, well, we'll be quick. Thank you.
They pick up their bags and go.
Thanks. Well, we got the halibut calabrese, got the halibut Olympia.
Keep going.
Halibut Cajun style.
Well, I can't wait to see what they got for dessert.
Men at the bar stare suspiciously.
Natives are getting restless.
We gotta talk.
No, we don't.
You just wanna sit tight, huh?
Nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed? What the fuck do you think we're doing in the halibut fishing capital of the world, Will?
Buck figured Charlie could use the help.
Buck figured IA would be coming to me next. And he was right. Warfield had me locked in his office for 3 hours yesterday, Will. 3 fucking hours.
Hap. He's rattling your cage, pal, that's all.
Me and Trish talked it through. And, I'm sorry, I gotta cut a deal.
Don't even say this shit to me, Hap.
You're not gonna be involved.
I'm not?
No.
Of course I'm gonna be involved.
You're a goddamn hero. With your reputation, he can't touch you.
My reputation's no problem. Do you think Warfield gives a flying fuck about you shaking down a couple of drug dealers? You think that's gonna get him his headlines? He needs the big fish. He's putting a squeeze on you to get to me. It's very simple, Hap.
But you're clean, Will.
I'm a good cop, yeah. But there's always something that they can use, you know, to get at your credibility, you know that.
Hap shakes his head.
Have you any idea what this is gonna do? I mean, just think about all my cases. All the cases depended on my word, my judgment. All those fuckers back on the street. Now you think about that. That's what you're doing.
It's bullshit. They got nothing on you because there's nothing to get.
Dobbs. What about Dobbs?
That's different.
It's different?
Yeah. Different. Because even Warfield doesn't want shit like Dobbs back on the street.
It's a house of cards, man. Once it starts, it's just gonna tumble. All of it.
It's a chance I gotta take, pal.
Dormer's head drops.
I got family, Will.
Don't give me that family shit.
Warfield made it clear. I get probation.
We're cops, man. This is not about us. This is about all the people who depend on us. People with families. I spent my life doing this. My life. You're gonna destroy it like that. Why? Why? So some IA prick gets one step closer to being chief of police? Or playing golf with the mayor, whatever the fuck else he's after.
You finished?
They stare at each other, unsmiling.
Sorry, I gotta cut a deal.
Dormer looks away.
So, make any decisions?
Boy, you do everything around here?
After 11, pretty much.
Ah. Over to you, Will. What are you having?
Dormer's unblinking brown eyes stare into Hap's blue ones.
Lost my appetite.
Dormer rises, picks up his glasses, coat and bag and leaves.
Excuse me.
Hap forces a smile up at the woman. In his room, Dormer gazes at the torn photo of Kay. In flashback, she smiles and laughs. Dormer lowers himself slowly onto the edge of his bed, looking out of the window at bright sunshine. He strides out of the motel in dark suit and short black leather overcoat. Hap and Ellie are waiting outside.
Morning.
Ellie smiles warmly. Dormer passes her grimly and climbs into the front of the four-wheel drive. Ellie gets in beside him. Hap, frowning, gets into the back. They drive off through the small town, misty cloud overhead, the tarmac black with rain.
What kind of calls you get around here?
Mostly drinking-related problems, domestic abuse, bar fights, that sort of stuff. And people here, they come from all over. They come to live life the way they want to, so most people keep themselves to themselves. And Chief Nybeck won't let me handle anything over a misdemeanor anyway, so...
You shouldn't knock misdemeanors.
No, but it's such small stuff. It gets so boring.
It's all about small stuff. You know, small lies, small mistakes. People give themselves away, same in misdemeanors as they do in murder cases. It's just human nature. Aren't you going to write that down?
Ellie glances down as if for pen and paper, looks up to see Dormer grinning. She parks by two flagpoles outside another long, low building. Inside, the officers wait at the door of a science lab while a teacher whispers to a student who looks up and heads towards them. Dormer is staring at Tanya, the other girl from the torn photo, who returns his gaze. In another classroom, the boy reaches into his bag.
Killed her?
No smoking on school premises.
Did you love her? Randy, did you love her?
Sure, she was nice.
She was nice. Wow. Well, that makes me all soft inside. Ever occur to you she didn't love you back?
She loved me. Wanted me every night.
Oh, probably to pass the time, I think. Girl like Kay Connell, she was looking for more than some loser. Right?
What can I say, officer? Love is blind.
You live on your own?
Top of his grandpa's building.
You don't have an alibi for Friday night, do you?
Didn't know I was going to need one.
At the party, what'd you find about?
Stuff. I don't know. It's no big deal.
Oh, I heard it was a loud fight.
I guess.
No, I heard it was pretty rough.
It wasn't rough.
Well, not like the other times. You know, she wouldn't listen to you. Couldn't keep her mouth shut.
You keep fishing, man.
We saw the bruises, Randy.
They said she was beaten.
Not those bruises. Randy, come on. The old bruises. Your bruises.
All right, you know what? I'm sick of this bullshit. I haven't done anything wrong.
You haven't.
The boy, blue-eyed, long brown hair, stares at Dormer.
Hey, fuck you! You're just a little prick in a leather jacket. What the fuck do you know?
Dormer smiles at him.
Randy.
Dormer pulls Randy's chair closer, face to face. He takes a cigarette and flicks it towards Hap, who grinds it out on the floor.
This whole thing you're doing, you know, this fuck the world act. Now that might work with you, Mama. It might even work with a couple of these local cops who've known you long enough to figure you're too dumb ever to kill anyone without leaving a couple of witnesses and a signed confession. Ain't gonna work with me. Because I know things. You understand? I know you beat your girlfriend. I know she was seeing somebody else. Somebody she might have even gone to see after she walked out on you Friday night. Now you gonna tell us who that somebody might be? Are you so fucking stupid? You gonna leave yourself as the last person to see Kate Connell alive?
Randy lowers his eyes, looks away, shrugs.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I couldn't get her to tell me.
Dormer leans back, brown eyes gazing at Randy. He glances away and back, nods gently.
How hard did you try?
Pretty hard.
Randy's looking straight into Dormer's eyes. Dormer gets up and walks round behind Randy, who doesn't move. In the corridor, Ellie eagerly joins the two men. Dormer pulls out Kay's locket, dangling it between them.
You think he,
No.
How'd it go?
You gotta find out where this came from.
I tried. Mrs. Connell doesn't know, her friends didn't know.
You tried a jewelry store.
She smiles uncertainly.
Small things, remember? The second you're about to dismiss something, you think about it. Look at it again.
Want me to write that down?
No, I'll remember it.
Ellie Burr?
Dormer strides into the detective's office, pulling on white rubber surgical gloves. Hap and Ellie follow him.
Where was it?
In a fishing cabin on the beach.
It is definitely Kay's?
Her book's at.
A couple kids found it.
Cabin been secured?
Francis is headed there right now.
Will you stop him? Tell him to stay clear.
Rich.
Biology and algebra. Let's find out who she studied with. Let's find out where she bought this.
A garish plastic pencil case hits the desk.
Otherwise, engaged, another J. Brody mystery. Who reads this kind of crap?
I read that kind of crap.
Read it. After it's dusted. Find anything that strikes you. Plot-wise, underlined passages. Just let me know. Anything.
There it is, diary.
Every word.
He hands the diary to Ellie, holds the brightly colored cloth bag upside down and shakes it.
That's it. Put it into evidence?
No.
Why?
Ellie. I want you to call every radio and TV station from here to Anchorage. You tell them we're looking for the bag Kay Connell left the party. Get it on the air in the next hour.
You got it.
He tosses Kay's bag onto the table.
Fill that bag up with books. Put it back where it was found. Let me eat this son of a bitch alive, knowing he missed something this big.
He hesitates, staring blankly upwards.
You know something, Charlie? Maybe this isn't such a hot idea. Guy picks up a bag, that don't make him guilty.
Well, it's solid.
I don't know. This kind of thing, I don't know. Maybe we do this by the numbers. Come on, bro. Hey, IA's gonna be on my ass. You know, I don't want this turning up in some courtroom 6 months from now when my rep's in the shit. They're pulling apart all my cases.
Come on, Will, that's bullshit.
Fuck you care!
He glares at Hap, who holds his eyes calmly. Charlie puts a hand on Dormer's shoulder.
Someone out there just beat a 17-year-old girl to death. Your job is to find him. You're a cop, not a lawyer. Don't let IA cut your balls off.
Charlie's right, Will.
Again, Dormer stands motionless and brooding. A grey heron flaps across a valley. It glides down into the dense, dark greenness of a hillside. Mist rises from the lake below. Cops' heads poke out between boulders, watching a tumble-down cabin on the shore. Duggar holds a walkie-talkie.
Opie-1, this is Opie-2. We still got nothing.
Yeah, it's nice. Light.
All plastic, except for the barrel and firing pin. Never rust. What do you carry down L.A.?
Smith & Wesson 45.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Ellie, carrying a thermos flask, joins Hap, Dormer, and the local cop behind some rocks. A little way off, Duggar throws a twig out of his hideaway.
Maybe this guy doesn't listen to the radio.
Prefers the voices in his head.
Ellie crouches between Hap and the local cop, opening the flask.
Hey, Will.
Dormer stares at Hap blankly and looks away again. Duggar looks up at the hillside and spots a man in a green coat walking down a path. He lifts his handset to his mouth.
OP-1, this is OP-2. Be advised, we got somebody moving towards the cabin.
Okay, fan out. Nice and easy.
The heavy figure, face hidden by a rain hood, crosses a timber bridge to the cabin built high above the water on stilts. A cop picks up a loud hailer.
Shit. Come on, let's go, go!
The man on the bridge starts running. Dormer chases after, gun held in both hands. The man disappears into the cabin. Cops are scrambling over huge boulders towards the bridge. Dormer reaches the door first, followed by Hap and Duggar. They flatten themselves against the wall on either side of the cabin door.
Police! Police! Come out!
Dormer nods at the gum-chewing Hap, who kicks the door open. Dormer swings inside the dark, shadowy cabin first, crouching low, gun held in front of his body. Hap and Duggar follow.
Fuck.
There's a wide hole in the floor.
Down to the water. Go! Spread out! Go!
Hap and Duggar go. Dormer stares down into the water.
Fuck it.
And jumps. Under the cabin, he's in a tunnel, rock-walled, with water dribbling and splashing over the shining stone. Light gleams ahead of him. Dormer wades slowly forwards, water over his ankles. As he nears the light, he begins to run, until he finds himself clear of the tunnel and the cabin, on the lake shore, peering through thick mist. Dormer frowns, squints at the almost invisible hill running up from the shore, and with gun still held firmly before him, starts to move through the mist. He looks left and right, eyes wide, face tense with concentration. He disappears into the mist, reappears, walking sideways on the sloping shingle.
Dormer!
Dormer swivels round quickly, and a young local cop emerges, crouching from behind a rock. They stand close together, peering through the thick mist, an almost impenetrable grey-blue. A shadow appears, takes on the shape of a man.
Hold it! Who's there?
The figure lifts his arm.
You okay?
I'm okay.
Looking up from the young cop sprawled on the ground, Dormer sees the man, gun still in hand, disappearing back into the mist and scrambles up the hillside after him. He pauses, looks around, catches another glimpse, gives chase, slips and slides down a steep rock. He recovers, runs on, close behind for a moment, but the mist swallows the man up. Dormer slows down, walking carefully, looking all around him. Trees materialize through the mist, bare, without branches, snapped and broken, shapes almost human. Dormer moves warily, black pistol still gripped firmly in both hands out in front of him. He backs round, desperately trying to focus through the mist. A vague figure emerges for a moment, running, crouching low. Dormer raises his gun. The figure merges into the greyness. Dormer turns, sees another figure drift through the mist, gun raised, watchful like himself. Dormer aims. Pockets his gun, drags another from under his coat and aims again. The figure falls. Dormer watches a moment, moves forward, stooping to pick up a revolver lying among the rocks and pocketing it. Dormer approaches the shot man slowly. Lying on his side, mouth wide open, is Hap. Dormer replaces his gun under the back of his coat and kneels beside Hap, rolling him over onto his back. A cut runs from the corner of Hap's mouth across his cheek.
I will. Don't talk. Here. No, I know. I couldn't see him. Here.
You tried to kill me?
You fucking...
Listen, Hap.
No, I couldn't see him in the fog. I couldn't see Hap. Don't go.
Dormer's fingers are pressed against Hap's neck. Hap's eyes roll up, then close. His head lolls onto Dormer's hand. Dormer stares down, mouth open, jaw slack, grey-black hair flopping over his forehead. He sits back on the ground, looking vaguely around, then looks up.
Man down! Man down here!
He looks down at Hap as Duger appears through the mist.
Dormer, where'd he go? Which way? Dormer, which way?
Dormer lifts his head, gesturing somewhere ahead of him. Duger moves off as Ellie arrives. She stares, horrified, first at Hap, then at Dormer. At police headquarters...
Farrell went down. You gave chase. After you left Farrell, you heard the killer's second shot. You ran down to the water. You found Hap.
Dormer slumped at a desk, face blank.
Will? Is that what happened?
Charlie looks at him intently. Dormer nods.
Did Hap say anything?
God damn it! Why didn't I know about the goddamn tunnel? You don't move in on an armed suspect without knowing his exits.
Look, Will, there's a bunch of those tunnels out there. I mean, closed 60 years ago when they were mines. I don't even know most of them myself, and I grew up here.
I had them, Charlie. Close as you are now, I could smell the son of a bitch. And I blew it.
There's no point in blaming yourself, Will. Don't you come apart on me now, you understand? I need you to find this bastard. Yeah.
Ellie comes in.
You wanted to see me.
You're on Detective Eckhart's shooting.
But we know what happened, and I'm on the Connell case.
Anchorage called. They want to send someone up. I told them we can handle it ourselves. We can't we?
Sure.
Write it up. Doesn't have to be Shakespeare. Just enough to fry this son of a bitch for a few seconds longer, am I right, Will?
Dorman looks round. His face remains blank. Sitting at another desk in headquarters, Dorman lifts a handset and slowly punches in some numbers. Nearby, Ellie is leaning on a desk, face in hands, watching him.
Hello?
Jenny. It's Will. Can you put your mother on?
Hello?
Trish, it's Will.
What's happened? They won't tell me anything.
It's happened.
Okay?
Well, he's gone, Trish. He's dead. Trish, I can't tell you how sorry I am.
What was he doing, Will?
This guy killed a girl, and so we had him, we found him and we had him cornered, and then he ran, and then, Hap, I'm so sorry. I'm just so sorry.
Did he suffer?
Oh, no, I don't.
Did he say anything?
In flashback, Hap's lips are moving.
When I found him, he was peaceful. No, no, not yet.
You find him. And when you do, you don't arrest him. You understand me, Will Dormer? Don't you dare fucking arrest him.
Okay, Trish.
You understand?
Okay. Trish, listen. I'm...
The dim light casts shadows into the lines on his face. The handset almost slips through his fingers as he replaces it. He looks up to see Ellie watching him through a glass door. She comes in, puts car keys on the desk, smiles gently and goes. His slim fingers search for the keys as he stares emptily ahead. The wet tarmac rushes by under the wheels of the four-wheel drive. Dormer stops suddenly, jumps out, and rushes into a narrow alley. He bends forward, head pressing into a wall, his feet in a puddle, silhouetted against the grey light at either end of the alley. He pushes himself upright and rests against the wall behind him. Glancing down, he finds himself looking into the glassy brown eye of a dead dog. He stares at it for some moments, before heading unsteadily back to the car, wiping his mouth with a handkerchief. In the motel, the woman is in a kitchen behind reception. Dormer leans over the desk and picks up his key.
Division was shot and killed earlier this evening in an abortive attempt to apprehend a suspect in the murder of 17-year-old local girl, Kay Conn.
Sorry. It's been on the radio for hours. We don't... not used to this kind of stuff up here.
Dorman looks at her a moment, then turns away.
He was standing right there last night. I hope I was nice to him.
He liked you.
She watches him go, his filthy shirt open almost to the waist, hair untidy. In his room, Dorman pulls a brown blind halfway down the window. The light from outside gives the blind a dirty orange tinge. Dormer takes the revolver from his inside jacket pocket, turns it over slowly. In flashback, sees himself pick it up from the rocks on the shore. He scans the floor, testing the red-brown tiles with his shoe. He feels the edge of one tile with his finger, takes out a clasp knife, and starts scratching away the cement around it. He pulls the tile out, revealing an empty space beneath. He picks up the gun in his white handkerchief, wipes it, and still holding it in the handkerchief, places it in the hole. He carefully slides the handkerchief out of the hole and pushes the tile back in place. He washes the handkerchief in the basin, rubbing the soap in hard, rinsing and repeating. The green time display from a clock flashes. Dormer's lying in bed, staring at the dingy orange light filtering through the blind. He looks at the clock, 3:58, and puts it in the drawer of his bedside table. In flashback, he sees the torn photo of Kay, her smiling, laughing face, and the figure in surgical gloves rubbing red liquid into white cotton. Dormer drinks from a glass on the table, takes a stick of gum, tosses and turns. He sees Hap's face in flashback at headquarters. In the cabin. He stares at a diamond pattern in the wallpaper. He watches a streak of light by the blind growing wider, red liquid seeping into white knitted wool, Hap's face turning to him on the rocks by the lake. He stares at the ceiling. At headquarters, Ellie approaches him.
Detective, sorry to bother you, but could you just point out here where you were when you heard that second shot? I'm really sorry that I had to make you do this right now.
It's all right, Ellie. You're doing your job. Well, was I? No sign of Farrell's bullet yet.
No, but we'll have the other one for ballistics after the autopsy.
He nods.
I'm really sorry.
She smiles and leaves him. Dormer's standing by Farrell's bed in hospital.
How you doing?
Okay.
Clean through, huh?
Yeah. No souvenir. Bullet got lost in the rocks, I guess.
Well, better luck next time.
You ever been shot, Detective Dormer?
Yeah, I have. Kind of itches, don't it? We gotta catch him.
Did you get a look at him? When?
When I left you. Did you see anything?
I was in a whole lot of pain, and when I heard that second shot, I kept my goddamn head down. Hey, sorry about Detective Eckhart. Sorry about that megaphone. Maybe if I had...
Farrell, listen. What were we doing out there running around in the fog anyway? We doing it for our health. We were chasing someone. So anything that happened on that beach is not your fault. That's the fault of one man, and one man only. And that's the man who beat Kay Connell to death.
Out at the cabin, Ellie's talking to a dictaphone. A fat, gray-haired cop stands where Farrell was shot.
At this point, Detective Dormer encountered Officer Brooks. The suspect, obscured by the fog, shot Officer Brooks in the vastus externus of the upper left thigh. Francis Ruffaro. He was shot in the leg.
Come on.
Rich, when you get the shot, make sure we get the cone.
Is this his blood?
Ketchup, maybe. Was he eating a hot dog?
The cop makes a rude gesture and reluctantly lies down. Another cop takes a photo of him. Ellie walks on.
Not anything he might have dropped or stepped on. You put in a bag. Cigarette butts, gum wrappers, coins, anything. Suspect will often leave something behind.
Detective Dormer gave chase, losing the suspect in the fog, then heard a shot coming from a northeasterly direction.
Another cop's lying in the rocks.
He wasn't lying that way.
How do you know?
Because I saw him. You need to turn this way.
Are we almost done here? My nads are freezing off.
Ellie!
The fat cop.
I think I found something!
You think we should start further over?
No, it's a waste of time. He stayed down by the water as far as he could. I saw him over the rocks. He knew he'd lose us down there.
Duggar. Where'd you find him? Okay.
Dormer stares at one of the people slowly searching the woods. The man looks at him. It's Hap. Dormer blinks. The man looks away. He isn't Hap, but Dormer keeps on staring.
Dormer. Found Farrell's bullet. Looks like a 38. After the autopsy, we'll get both bullets to the lab in Anchorage. See if we can get a fix on the murder weapon. That is, if it's okay with you.
Dormer just nods. At the motel.
Guy came by to see you today. Said he was your new partner.
We leave a name?
Nope.
Can I borrow this, sir? Thank you.
He takes a roll of tape.
Pioneer Lodge. Warfield for Dormer. Detective John Warfield. He's called a couple times.
Dormer leans wearily on the desk.
Want me to lie?
No, it's all right. I'll take it. Thank you.
He takes the phone and turns away from the desk.
Dormer.
Shocked to hear about your partner there, Detective. It's terrible. I
I was actually just getting to know him a little bit.
What do you want?
I think we both know what I want, Detective, and I think you know Eckhart was going to give it to me.
You know, you got something to say. Why don't you just say it?
Told you about a little conversation, didn't he?
Say it.
Well, let's just say I'm very, very interested to see your report on what happened there yesterday.
Don't presume to know what happened. You weren't here. But then again, you never are, are you? And you're always sitting safe behind some fucking desk reading your bullshit reports. And that is why I have nothing but contempt for you. You and all the assholes like you. Risk nothing, spend all day sucking the marrow out of real cops when you never had the balls to be one yourself.
The woman watches him as he stands motionless for a moment. In his room, Dormer carefully retrieves the revolver from under the tile, holding it with his handkerchief. He walks down the stairs into reception, holding his right arm bent at his side, as if supporting something under his black leather jacket. Outside, he passes the wooden statue of a bear and crosses the neat shingle driveway to the road. Black mountains, their tops streaked with snow, form a backdrop to a wide and empty town road. Dormer walks nonchalantly down the center of the road, turning right at the traffic lights. He checks under his jacket and glances round as he nears big black rubbish bins at the back of some low buildings. He turns into the alley where he was sick and stops at the same place. Looking out into the empty street, he pulls the revolver from under his jacket, wraps a small white towel round the gun and over the muzzle, looks down into the eye of the dead dog and takes aim. He steps back, glances both ways to the street, puts down the gun, opens his clasp knife, puts it beside the gun and pulls on white rubber surgical gloves. Picking up the knife, he digs into the dog, his face contorted with effort. With his left hand, he burrows into the dog, gritting his teeth. In the shadowy alley, he's silhouetted against the street beyond him. Not looking at the dog, he slowly withdraws his gloved hand, now smothered in blood, and rolls the bullet between his fingers before carefully placing it beside the gun. With one more quick glance into the street, he strips off the gloves, stuffs them in a bin, picks up the towel, wipes his hand with it, puts it down, and places the bullet, knife, and gun on it. He wraps the towel around them, tucks it back under his jacket, and strolls into the street. Dormer walks slowly down a green neon-lit corridor into a morgue, where a woman with thick white hair wearing blue theatre fatigues is pulling a sheet over the waxy face of Hap. He stops for a moment, his face expressionless, staring at the table where Hap lies.
Detective, you came yourself.
He walks right up to the table.
Sign here.
She hands him a clipboard and walks to the other side of the room. His eyes flicker between the paper and Hap. He sees Hap's pain-filled face by the shore.
You didn't suffer too much.
She gives him a clear plastic bag.
It's the caliber.
No. The gunshot victims I see here are from hunting rifles and shotguns. Wasn't one of those.
He looks at the bullet in the bag.
Had any sleep, Detective?
Yeah.
He turns and walks slowly back down the corridor, eyebrows slightly raised, emphasizing the deep furrows in his brow. Sitting in the car, he takes the bullet from the dog out of the top pocket of his shirt, picks up the plastic bag from the morgue, and swaps over the two bullets. He puts the morgue bullet back in his pocket, the plastic bag on the seat beside him, and starts to drive away.
What the hell's wrong with you?
All right.
The blonde woman continues across the road. At headquarters, he passes Ellie and stops in front of Duggar.
Bullet, I want results by tomorrow morning.
Aye, aye, Captain. I'm thinking we should check on Randy Stetz's whereabouts 2 nights ago.
You think it was Randy out there?
Well, he still doesn't have an alibi for the night Kay was killed. You're the one saying you beat her up.
Will you check it out then?
I will.
Dormer steps back from the desk and looks around the office. An officer reading a sheet of paper rattles a pencil between his teeth. Another pumps coffee from a thermos. Pink streamers fly from a spinning fan. A stapler is punched. A filing cabinet drawer closed. Dormer notices Ellie standing beside him.
My report, I finished it. So I just need you to look it over and sign it. It's pretty self-explanatory. Yeah. I'm looking forward to getting back to working with you. Now we have more important things to do than paperwork.
Dormer looks at her over the glasses he's put on to read the report. He sees her signature at the foot of the page and takes his pen away from the line marked supervising officer.
Man died, Ellie. This is important.
Oh, of course. I didn't mean to imply that that wasn't...
Be sure of all your facts before you file this thing. It's your name on the report.
He gazes at her a moment and walks past her. She seems confused as she watches him go. She glances down at the report again and moves away. In his room, Dormer tapes the sides of his blind to the window, pressing the tape firmly down the edge of the frame. Ellie, in a dark blue vest, rotates an elaborate scene of crime map, matching the photos taken near the cabin to locations on the map. She's lying on her side on a sofa, her head resting on the arm. Lying on his bed, Dormer holds out a hand to shade his eyes from the light flooding through the blind. In flashback, he sees the figure rubbing liquid into white cloth. Lying on his side, he stares at the diamond pattern on the wall. Blood soaks into the white knitted wool. On his back, he stares at the ceiling. A figure moves through the mist. He fires. Hap is lying on the ground, eyes closed, Dormer's hand on his chest. The photos fall from Ellie's fingers. She wakes, pulls herself up and arranges them on the map again and frowns.
He couldn't have come from there.
Facing away from the window, Dormer's head sinks into the pillow. His eyes slowly close. He sits up. Dormer's eyes wander around the room. Very slowly, he hangs up. He sits staring into space. His clock, which read 4:17 while he was on the phone, now reads 7:29. The display turns to 7:30. Dormer stands, puts his police shield on the table and fingers the photo of Kay. At a lakeside cemetery...
But to be remembered as the Kay we knew and loved. Swimming, hiking through the cabows, meeting at Darrow's after school, and always, always with a smile on her face.
Ellie walks over to Dormer.
Detective Dormer. Hiya, I want to check something with you. I was going over my report last night, and I have a question about where you think that second shot came from. See, you said you heard it from the water line, but from the way Detective Eckhart's body fell, I don't think it could have come from the rocks further up from the water. So do you think it's possible that maybe you heard the shot before you hit the water line?
He's watching Randy and Tanya whispering.
Detective Dormer?
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah.
Dormer follows Randy to his motorbike, Tanya's sitting on a wall beside him, skirt hitched up over her thighs, smoking.
Why don't I give her a ride?
Thought I smelled something.
How you doing, Randy? You still coping?
You're that cop.
Yeah.
You coming or not?
She looks at them both.
Not.
Oh.
She hops down from the wall.
Hey.
Snow-covered mountains lie ahead of the road. A river to one side, the green shoulder of a hill above them.
You want to stick a gum? I love chewing gum.
Tanya lights a cigarette.
Keeps me awake.
I never met anyone from L.A. before.
Not missing much.
I like our shithole town.
No, it's not bad. Were you good friends with Kay?
Yeah, best friends. It's grade school.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah, we're like sisters.
Like sisters? Must be pretty tough for you what happened then.
Everyone keeps telling me I'm doing great considering. But they're all real worried about me.
She smiles.
They don't even care if I show up to school or not. Worried I haven't cried yet. But you know Law says you gotta cry, right?
No, they ain't.
She flicks back her blonde hair, pulls her skirt up her thigh, watching him.
What about her other friends?
Do we have to talk about Kay right now? Just don't want to think about all that. Just drive.
I understand. You want me to take you somewhere?
Sure, as long as it's fun. Young, impressionable girl left alone with older Los Angeles cop. Who knows where we might go, right?
Well, I know a place.
Her fingers are on his thigh.
This is drifting.
He steers into the path of a huge lorry.
Oh, look at this. Who does he think he is? What does he think he's doing?
The lorry's lights are flashing.
Hey, move over.
Let him move over.
Hey, come on, move over. What the fuck are you doing? Move over, you think you fuck? Holy shit!
Well, that moved over.
He stops in a rubbish dump, gets out and drags out Tanya.
Just a little visit to the dump. You should feel right at home here.
You just about fucking killed us both! After me! What the fuck is this?
You and Kay were like sisters.
Yes, I told you already.
Now how come there's torn pictures of you in her bedroom? Why was her boyfriend's hands clamped all over your ass at her funeral? Randy Stetson doesn't have an alibi for Friday night because he was out with you. You were out fucking your best friend's boyfriend. Is that what best friends do?
Look, she never really loved Randy, okay?
You didn't really love him?
No.
That's interesting. How do you figure that? She had someone else?
No.
Someone bought her dresses, jewelry, all that shit. Hey, look around. Here. I want to show you something, see? Now you'll understand why I brought you. This is the spot where your best friend's naked body was dumped. Wrapped up in garbage bags! Tanya, I know you don't want anyone knowing. You betrayed your best friend with Randy. That's why you will not give him an alibi for Friday night. I know that. Now you tell me who Kay was seeing. We could forget the whole thing. Maybe our little secret. But I need a name. I need a name.
I don't know. She wouldn't tell me, okay?
She wouldn't tell you? Maybe she wouldn't tell you, her best friend.
It was her big fucking secret.
Secret? Why secret?
I don't... Because she thought she was special and... She kept saying she was gonna get out of here and he was gonna help her.
Who is he?
I don't know.
She talked about him.
Yeah.
She talked to you about him.
Yeah.
And when she talked about him, what'd she call him? She called him something, right? She was talking
yes.
about
Yes!
Why? What'd she call him?
Brody. Okay, she called him fucking Brody, but that's not his real name, so it's a fucking difference! Jesus, you have it now, you fucking asshole!
She walks away, leaving Dormer scowling, the wind blowing through his dark hair.
Okay, you did good, honey. Come on. I'll let you drive. You want to drive?
A knife slices through the tape around a box. Opening it, Dormer pulls out Kay's diary and the paperback novel from his school bag.
It's just poetry. I read it line by line. It's, nothing specific. Verses on nature, love, that sort of stuff.
He leaps through it.
Detective Dormer, line one.
Dormer here.
How you holding up? Can't be easy to keep working after 3 days of no sleep. Hard to keep focus. I mean, are you seeing things yet? You know, those little flashes, tricks of light. See your partner? I see Kay sometimes.
What can I do for you, sir?
Why couldn't you tell anyone you shot him? I mean, it was an accident, right?
Well, I should hope so, for your sake. You know what I'm saying?
No need for threats. I'm just trying to make you understand my own situation.
Huh?
See, you thought no one would believe you because of the trouble in Los Angeles, right? I know what that's like, Will. I got the same problem.
You do, huh?
Mm-hmm. I'm not who you think I am.
You're not?
No. I'm not a murderer any more than you are.
Well, then why don't we get together, you know? Just talk, have a few beers, whatever.
Yeah, throw a little gas on the fire, huh?
Yeah.
Dormer notices that the novel is a Jay Brody mystery by Walter Finch. He copies down the name of the author's hometown on Kumeyaay. He tears a note from a pad, stands, and turns to Ellie.
I gotta go check some things out. Why don't you, put this stuff back in evidence and tell, what's that?
Fred.
Fred, you tell him, I'll see him in the morning.
Oh, and can we return this? Her mother might like it back.
Oh, sure.
Ellie's holding Kay's diary. A road sign reads on Kumeyaay, 15 miles. Dormer shoves something wrapped in a towel into the glove compartment, which he slams shut. Hundreds of tree trunks lie in the waters of a peaceful bay surrounded by mountains. From the directory at a phone booth on the quay, Dormer finds an address for Walter Finch. He leaves the car near an intersection and crosses the wide, wet streets to an apartment building, lets himself in through the glass door, which is protected by wrought iron on the inside, and peers around the dimly lit hall. The hall is empty. He walks slowly to a staircase, goes up the stairs and turns into another long, dark hallway, with half a dozen doors opening off it. Light from a part glazed door at the far end gleams on the glossy walls and woodwork. Dormer walks to the last door on the right, stops just beyond it, and looks back down the hall. He's holding his gun down beside his right leg. Standing clear of the door, he knocks with his left hand. He looks along the length of the hall again, holsters his gun, stands close to the door, and slides a plastic card down the door frame whilst turning the door handle. The door opens. He's holding something cupped in the palm of his hand, which he offers to the two golden Labradors standing inside. He also picks up a small green slip of paper that dropped from the door as he opened it. He puts it carefully on a table by the door and looks around the crowded apartment. The dogs are sniffing around in a small kitchen area. The living area contains several bookcases, a desk with a typewriter, a telephone and answering machine. A bound typescript lies open on the desk. He looks round. On another table lies a photo of a man, receding hair, smiling, hands in pockets of a weatherproof jacket. Underneath the first photo is a second, which Dormer picks up and folds. He spins round, stuffing the photo in his pocket, grabs a gun from under his jacket. The dogs sniff at the door. Dormer notices the green slip of paper. Outside, the man from the photo, Walter Finch, stares uncertainly at the place where the paper was wedged. Dormer runs to the door. Finch is disappearing around the corner. Dormer chases him down the stairs, out into the street, and runs across it. Dormer stops, hands on hips, staring at people meandering past the shops. Gazing round, he looks through a wide window into a bus station and sees Finch, who sees him at the same time and starts running. Dormer bursts into the bus station, barging past waiting passengers. Beyond the station, he sees Finch clambering over a chain-link fence. He drops over the far side and disappears. Dormer leaps onto the fence, scrambles over and chases Finch along a dirt path towards some bungalows. Finch swerves away, jumps onto a low flat roof, jumps off, and Dormer follows him down. They pound along a jetty lined on either side with logs and cut timber piled in tall stacks. Dormer's gaining on Finch, who suddenly swings left between two timber stacks. Dormer follows. Finch has sprinted down a wooden ramp and is running across a moving raft of tree trunks floating steadily down the river. He sprints confidently with short strides from one trunk to the next. At the foot of the ramp, Dormer hesitates. Dormer launches himself after Finch, but without his agility. He slips and stumbles, scrambles back onto his feet, the logs all the while carrying him downriver. He glances up at Finch, who's still moving nimbly. Dormer staggers on until he loses his footing completely and plunges into the water. Above him, the logs crash together, only occasionally letting dazzling shafts of light between them. Dormer rolls onto his back and claws his way along the length of the logs, momentarily getting his head above water for a gulp of air. He turns and pulls himself across the raft of logs, trying to haul himself up between them, but each time he pulls at them, they spin and close together above him. He screws his face up with effort. Again, he turns and starts to swim until he sees the rungs of a metal ladder, grabs at it and heaves himself up it, collapsing at the top onto another jetty. On his knees and dripping wet, he pulls himself around until he can see Finch, watching him from across a floating mass of red logs. Dormer stands and the two men stare at each other until Finch walks slowly away with just one backward glance. Dormer plods up the ramp from the jetty, his wet jacket hitched over the gun tucked in the back of his waistband. Halfway up, he bends forward and squeezes water from his hair. In pouring rain, he crosses the road to his car and takes the parcel wrapped in a towel from the glove compartment. The two dogs look up hopefully as Dormer lets himself into Finch's apartment. He places a towel parcel gently on Finch's desk and gingerly lifts his leather jacket off his shoulders. In the bathroom, he takes a dark green towel from a pile, places his pistol on the edge of the basin and dries his hair.
Hi, this is Walter. If you want to leave a message, wait for the beep.
Will, are you there? Where else could you go in that state? Man, you must have been freezing. If you want, take a shower. There should be some clean towels in the bathroom.
Dormer holds out the green towel and looks slowly around.
Hi, this is Walter. If you want to leave a message, wait for the beep.
Will, pick up. I'm not dumb enough to come back.
Walter Finch.
Will Dormer, what are you doing? I'm trying to help you and you're running around like a fucking maniac. Were you going to kill me? How would you explain that one?
Well, no one gets too upset when child murderers are brought in feet first.
There's no evidence that I killed Kay. You only know it because I told you what I saw on that beach. Come on, what's wrong with you?
Yes, I'm a little cranky. Lack of sleep, you know.
Get some rest, will you? I've got some pills in the bathroom cabinet, and my bed's nice and comfy. Another night up like this, and you're really going to lose it. Hallucinating, babbling, God knows what. Tomorrow, when you're feeling better, we'll meet. In public. We'll sort things out, okay? There's a ferry about 5 miles north of Nightmute. I'll be on 11 o'clock. And Will, before you leave, could you feed the dogs? They're on a diet.
Dormer stares hard at a heating vent low down on one wall. With his penknife, he undoes the retaining screws and takes off the grill. He picks up the towel from Finch's desk, unwraps the revolver from it, and wipes it before pushing it inside the vent. After refitting the grill, he wipes the unit with the towel. Grimacing in discomfort, he puts on his jacket and heads for the door. At police headquarters, Duggar and Ellie both look up.
Dormer, facts from the lab. Murder weapon was a 38 Smith & Wesson. And we also found something else might be worth checking out. Ellie,
I found this at the Connells.
She beams as she hands him another J. Brody mystery by Walter Finch.
And?
And it's the same author of the book we found in Kay's backpack.
It's signed by the author. Turns out he's a local writer.
Kay had all his books. I think we should check it out. Small stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Nice work, Ellie. She's got sharp eyes, huh?
Oh, you bet your ass she does.
Duggar moves away.
Good stuff.
Ellie walks off as Dormer pours himself a coffee and takes a sip. Dormer, in his black leather jacket, is walking past a row of cars down a ramp and onto a ferry. The metal boarding gate closes behind Dormer. He wanders slowly down a bright white outside staircase, along the deck and through a doorway. The ferry is sailing through ruffled water with black hills on either side. Dormer strolls through the saloon. Finch, broad-backed in his beige corduroy coat, is standing at the far end, staring through the forward windows, hands in pockets. Dormer joins him.
Oh, what a view.
Finch, blue-eyed and thin-lipped, turns.
I'm not who you think I am.
No. Walter Finch, lousy writer, lonely freak, murderer. No.
When I was 7 years old, my grandmother took me to Portland. We were walking along, these two guys ran by, they snatched her purse. At night, a police officer came to our hotel to ask questions. He stood the whole time. Uniform looked brand new. Shoes, badge were polished. He's like a soldier, only better. I have great respect for your profession, that's why I write about it. I even wanted to become a cop after I finished high school. I just couldn't pass all the tests.
Well, you should have tried out for internal affairs. They'd have taken you. What do you want from me, Finch?
After Kay died, I knew that everyone would think that I meant to do it. So I cleaned the body up, removed all trace of evidence that connected to me.
Except for your fucking novel.
Under pressure, you don't always see the wood for the trees. You, for one, should have figured that one out by now.
Finch smiles as he turns round and sits on a bench seat. Dormer sits beside him.
Brought somebody from LA. I panicked. I wasn't worried about the locals. I knew they'd connect me to Kay eventually. I could handle them. They never look in the eyes of a killer. Killing changes you. You know that. It's not guilt. I never meant to do it. It's like awareness. Life is so important. How could it be so fucking fragile? You'd see it right away, wouldn't you?
You're trying to impress me, Finch, because you got the wrong guy. Killing that girl made you feel special, but you're not. You're the same distorted, pathetic freak I've been dealing with for 30 years. You know how many of you I caught with your pants down?
I never touched her like that.
You wanted to. Now you wish you had. Best you could do it. Clip her nails. Now you're so different. You don't get it, do you, Finch? You're my job. You're what I'm paid to do. You're about as mysterious to me as a blocked toilet is to a fucking plumber. Reasons for doing what you did? Who gives a fuck?
Motivations are everything, Will. What did you see through the fog? I saw pretty clearly, didn't I? I saw you take aim.
Oh, come on, forget it, Finch.
Shoot your partner in the chest. I heard him say, get away from me. Why? Have anything to do with that internal affairs investigation? All that tension in your department?
You think I'm that easy, huh?
I'm just saying that's how it looks, you know? I mean, maybe even how it feels. How did it feel when you found out it was happening? Guilt? Relief? Suddenly you're free and clear. Did you ever think about it before that moment? I mean, what would it be like if he wasn't there anymore? Doesn't mean you did it on purpose, you know.
Finch gets up, smiling, and wanders towards a metal pillar in the middle of the saloon, Dormer following. They lean either side of the round pillar, shoulder to shoulder.
You figure if you got something on me, then I'm just gonna roll over, protect my reputation.
Protect your life's work. Every one of those scumbags you put away will be back on the street before you even go on trial. Half gone, you're free and clear. Why mess with that?
Kay Connell. Remember?
It's your choice. Think of all the other Kay Connells. Do the math. If you're a pragmatist, you have to be because of your job. I know this isn't easy for you, but I'm trying to get you to understand we're in the same situation here. You didn't mean to kill Hap any more than I meant to kill Kay. But that's kind of hard for them to believe. So that's why we need each other. We gotta find a patsy for the Connell case, make it stick. Do that, And you go back to Los Angeles, and I can go back to living my life.
So what do you need from me?
What do they know about me?
They found a signed copy of one of your books at Kay's house. So you're going to be brought in for questioning.
At the station.
Yeah, that's what they usually do.
Yeah.
Station.
Okay, brought in for questioning. I can write that easily.
That's fine. Well, calm down. It's no big thing. You know? It's a preliminary inquiry. So, you know, you just tell the truth.
Yeah. Tell about Randy.
What are you talking about Randy for? Talk about your relationship with Kay. You can't hide it, so you just say it. Randy is none of your business. It's not your affair.
Yeah. Well, shouldn't I tell him that she was unhappy? You know, there's
tell him she was unhappy, but just let them find Randy themselves. You know, that way they'll make it stick. Understand?
We need a wild card.
A wild card?
Yeah. Something that's there. Something we can use. You know, it's in every good detective novel. You still have the 38?
No.
Really? That's a shame. We could use that. That'd be very convincing for them.
Dormer's gazing away from Finch, who straightens up.
This is my stop.
He strolls past Dormer, head down and smiling out through the saloon door. Dormer wanders over to a window. Ashore, Finch turns.
Dormer!
Still smiling, Finch reaches into an inside pocket and pulls out a small tape recorder, holding it up as a ferry slips away.
Wild card!
Dormer nods almost imperceptibly. Ellie's bouncing a tennis ball on her desk.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Francis.
Francis lobs the ball across the office.
Working some overtime, huh?
Nice.
Cracking some big cases. Night.
Night, guys.
Ellie goes to retrieve a videotape which the ball knocked behind a filing cabinet. She picks up two tapes and a copy of the Los Angeles Times that Hap threw on the cabinet the day he arrived. She stands frowning at the headline, Robbery Homicide Section Faces Deeper Investigation, and carries on reading. A few lights glow warmly in the empty restaurant of Dormer's Motel, reflecting in the shining dark timber of roof beams and staircase. Dormer's at the window blind in his room. In flashback, he's in the mist at the lakeshore. He sees Hap clearly, yanks the gun from the back of his waistband and fires. He lowers the gun slowly. In the room, he picks up the phone.
Yeah.
This is always the worst time of night for me. Too late for yesterday, too early for tomorrow.
What do you want?
I'm sorry about the tape recorder.
I had to make sure you'd follow through. I know this is hard for you.
I'll follow through.
I've been thinking it over. I should tell him about Randy.
I think that's a bad idea, Walter.
But he's a patsy, Will. And besides, he deserves it.
You should have heard the shit Kay told me about him, how he abused her.
Yeah, but these are cops, you know, Walter. They're not children. You don't just throw something like that in their lap.
Leave Randy to me. I'll push him toward Randy.
When the time is right. You understand?
Yeah, but we don't
have the gun, Will. How are we going to
convince him he's guilty if we don't have that?
Huh?
I mean, unless I tell
him. You keep the dress.
The dress?
Kay's dress, her nail clippings. What'd you do with those things?
That's great. Dress. We could use that.
That's even better than the gun. We just have to think of a
place where we could have taken the body.
Where'd you take her? I mean, she died in the cabin, right?
Yeah.
So where'd you take her to clean her up?
You don't want to think about that, Will. This is tough enough for you
already.
Well, it was an accident, right?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to kill her, Will. You know that, don't you?
I know. And what happened?
She called and said that she and Randy
had a fight. And she wanted to come over and talk.
I said, meet me at our place. It's the cabin at the beach. And
she comes over. She's distraught, a little drunk. And she starts telling me about how Randy and Tanya are carrying on.
I only wanted to comfort her, hold her. Kissed her and got a little excited.
She started laughing at me. She wouldn't stop laughing.
You ever had somebody laugh at you when you're like that? Well, I mean, when you're really vulnerable.
Laughing their ass off at you. Someone you thought respected you.
You ever have that happen, Will?
I just wanted to stop her laughing, that's all. And then, you know, I hit her. A couple of times, you know, just to stop her, let her know, get a little respect.
And now Randy did all the time. I think she would like to when he did it. You know, she never blamed him. She never wanted to leave him. But now I do it. She starts screaming. She wouldn't stop. You know, I
you know, she's terrified. She's screaming her head off. I put my hand over her mouth. And then I'm really scared. I'm like, yeah, I'm scared shitless. More scared than I've ever been to her. And, you know, I'm more scared than her.
And then...
there's no turning back.
A wet flannel dabs at Kay's bloody lips.
And after that, I was calm. Real calm. You and I share a secret. We know how easy it is to kill somebody.
That ultimate taboo.
It doesn't exist outside our minds.
I didn't murder her.
I killed her, but it just ended up
that way.
So where'd you take the body?
Thanks for listening to me.
Feels good to talk about that stuff. I'll be able to sleep
now.
You want to talk about Hap?
Finch runs his hand through his hair. Slowly, Dormer puts down the phone. Ellie is sitting on a low wall outside the motel. She stands as Dormer strolls out.
Morning, Ellie.
Your phone isn't working.
Yeah, I know. I turned it off. I need to sleep. I'm sorry.
Fred called that author. He said he was more than happy to cooperate. He'll be in first thing, so we need to get to the office.
Good.
I forgot to tell you, they sell these in a chain of stores in Anchorage. No way of finding out about it.
Okay.
It's Kay's locket.
I bet you're looking forward to getting back to Los Angeles when this is all over. Back to robbery, homicide, or maybe not.
What are you saying to me, Ellie?
Nothing.
They gaze at each other.
Are you doing okay? I mean, you haven't been sleeping much, Detective Dormer.
No, I haven't, no.
He holds her look, then turns and walks away from her, chewing on his gum.
A good cop can't sleep because a piece of the puzzle's missing, and a bad cop can't sleep because his conscience won't let him. You said that once.
I did?
She nods with a little grin. He shakes his head.
Well, it sounds like something I'd say, don't it? I'll see you back there.
So you were acquainted with the deceased Kay Connell?
Yes, I was.
In what regard were you her familiar?
Ellie puts the mug in front of Finch.
How did you know her, Finch?
She was an avid reader of my detective novels.
When did you meet her for the first time?
About a year ago. She came to one of my signings here in Nightmute. She hung around afterwards and we chatted about my writing and how she wanted to write, and then we started talking, and she asked if she could visit me and talk about books and things like that.
And she did?
And we became very close. She got comfortable enough to show me some of her own writing.
What does she write?
Poetry, actually.
Any good?
No, not really.
You tell her that?
Why would I?
So, exactly what was the nature of your relationship to this girl, Finch?
So it was someone she could talk to, someone outside of her everyday life. I think that's why she needed me, why she probably approached me.
Why'd she need you for that?
Well, her boyfriend, Randy.
Randy Stets.
Abusive little prick. He hit her.
We know all this already, Finch.
No, but it was getting worse.
So?
No, but it was a lot worse, really.
Why all this eagerness to talk about Randy Stets, Finch?
Well, oh, you're right, I'm sorry, Detective. That's probably all hearsay anyway, and I don't want to say anything that could be taken the wrong way.
Excuse me, Mr. Finch, anything you say to us at this stage is in strict confidence. Secondly, we're not a bunch of hotheads who are just going to draw to a bunch of crazy conclusions, okay?
Okay.
Please, continue.
Well, there was one more thing. It probably doesn't mean very much, but I think that Kay was getting scared. I probably have myself to blame for that.
Why is that?
Randy knew who I was. Not who I was, but... knew that she had a friend, someone she could confide in, and that made him furious. She was always writing about how scared she was, and her letters were getting more and more desperate.
You still have any of these letters, by any chance?
Yeah, I probably do. Do you think it might help?
They might.
Duga glances down unhappily.
Okay. Anything else?
Well, the thing that worried her the most was the gun.
He had this old handgun. He showed it to her. Don't know where he got it. I mean, it probably wasn't even his, but he said he was going to use it if he found out who she was seeing. He kept it hidden in a heating vent, you know, in the skirting boards.
He looks straight at Dormer, who looks away. Duga strides behind Dormer to the door.
Maybe the 38. Yeah. Get me Judge Biggs.
What are you doing?
I'm going to get a search warrant over to Randy's place. You got that? Get Judge Biggs on the phone right away. I want everyone moving 5 minutes ago.
Get over there.
Hey, you know what? No.
Okay? No? What do you mean no?
You're the guy he's talking to, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah?
Yeah, so we're waiting for the warrant. Is that
yes.
Okay with you?
I need Judge Biggs. Okay, I'll try that.
Mr. Finch, do you know when Randy showed her the gun?
February?
I'm looking for Judge Biggs.
No, probably January.
Why didn't you come forward with this information when she died?
She swore me to secrecy. She didn't want anybody to know about that.
Even when she was dead, she didn't want anyone to know. Beaten to death?
I was honoring her wishes.
A body dumped on a pile of garbage?
I was her friend.
You weren't a friend.
All right, acquaintance, all right? We were close, and
we were
I
close,
was just...
Mm-hmm. She was attractive. Gave 6 months.
She was 17.
17? She was attractive.
I suppose.
She was.
Right.
Well, so did you have sex with her?
No, I was her mentor.
You bought her things?
Yeah.
Gifts?
Yes.
What kind of gifts?
Books, mostly. That's what she loved.
Books?
Mm-hmm.
What about this? You give her this?
Yes.
Why?
Why?
You want to see how she looked with it on?
No.
No? Why would you give her Julia?
It's just a present.
Present?
Yeah.
You bought a lot of presents. You bought her dresses?
Yes, what's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong. I'm just trying to figure out what kind of mentor you were.
I gave her things she couldn't have.
You just want to fuck her. Son of a bitch! Oh, Tor!
Cool down, sick bastard.
Hey,
you gotta cool down.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool down.
All right. I need a break.
Having pulled Dormer away from Finch, Duga waits by the door while he leaves the room. Ellie watches tensely, catching Duga's eyes as he comes back to the table. Dormer throws the grey four-wheel drive through a turn at an empty intersection.
I have to apologize on behalf of my colleague. He's been under a lot of pressure lately. He's a good cop.
I'd hate to see the bad cop.
Ellie looks away. Dormer's sprinting through the garden and up the outside stairs of a white clapboard house.
Search and seizure warrant. Yes, sir. Randy's fence, and we'll fill in the rest later.
Dormer forces the door of the house and slides through, closing it behind him. He looks around the dark, cluttered room. Murals, a stereo stack, shelves, a wash basin.
Got our warrant!
Mr. Finch, thank you. I appreciate it.
Dormer moves around the room, peering behind the furniture, at a table full of mechanical bits and pieces, brushes, plastic containers. Behind the end of a low couch, he spots a heating vent, kneels and starts to unscrew the grill.
Francis, you're coming with me. Let's go!
Duga strides out of headquarters, followed by a uniformed cop. Dormer gets the first screw out.
You're not going with him?
No.
Duga runs out to a police car, followed by two uniformed cops. Dormer has trouble fitting the knife blade into the worn head of a screw, but the screw starts to move. The grill comes off. Dormer feels inside, then shoves the grill back on. He gazes round at the mess of engine parts, mouth hanging open.
Are you not on the Connell case?
Outside headquarters.
Yeah, I'm covering the shooting of Detective Dormer's partner.
I heard about that. It's tragic.
Dormer searches a chest of drawers.
So should I still call you about Kay's letters?
Yeah, call me. I'll come pick him up.
Okay.
Dormer, wearing surgical gloves, goes over to the workbench and rummages through the clutter, opens a metal box. Outside, two police cars pull up. Dormer turns to the door as Duga gets out of the first car, reaching for his gun, and runs to the stairs. Dormer frantically searches some shelving and another tabletop as Duga races up the staircase. Dormer stares at the door, rushes across the room, and pulls another door closed behind him as Duga bursts in, gun raised. Dormer looks frantically around the tiny room, green tiles halfway up the wall and dirty brown above. He tries a sloping window which doesn't open.
All right. Turn the place over!
Dormer leans back against the wall, his eyes wide and desperate.
Put your hand again. Under there.
Things tumble to the floor from shelves and tables.
Okay, try over there.
Dormer sees shadows of moving feet under the door. On the other side, the fat, grey-haired cop looks at the door thoughtfully. Dormer sees the handle slowly turning.
I got it! Hey, Fred!
While Dormer's eyes are still locked on the handle, the fat cop walks away, smiling. Dormer steps forward so the light from the little window glares white on his drawn and anxious face. He steps carefully out of the room and crosses to a corner under the eaves. Duggar, hands on hips, watching another cop crouching down, looks up at him.
Just in time, Dormer.
Had it in the motor oil.
The cop on the floor holds the revolver on a pencil through its trigger guard.
What the fuck is this?
Randy stands in the doorway. Outside, Duggar marches Randy, handcuffed behind his back, to one of the pale blue police cars. Dormer's half sitting on the bonnet of the other one. As Randy's pushed into the car, he stares hard at Dormer, who looks back broodingly. Ellie's frowning as she drives, the greenery outside the car blurred by speed. Duggar leaves the interview room.
So now he's saying he was with Tanya Frankie the night Kate was killed.
Well, that's what she told me.
When?
When I questioned her.
Well, that's nice. Were you planning on telling anyone? Or just...
Well, that's what I'm doing now.
Ellie walks slowly across the bridge towards Finch's cabin, stops, looks along the river, moves on.
Well, Randy and Tanya were screwing around on Kay, and clearly she's just trying to protect him.
What's he say about the gun?
Says it isn't his. I think once we get the ballistics match, he's going to be a little more forthcoming. So, you leaving us?
First thing tomorrow.
If Spencer can remember where he parked the plane, right?
Dormer looks at him blankly. Ellie's wandering along the lakeshore. The four-wheel drive rolls along a straight dirt track beside mirror-smooth water with steep dark hills all around and stops. The lights go off. Outside, Finch sits waiting, smiling to himself. Ellie's clambering over rocks towards the water's edge. Dormer approaches Finch.
I really thought you wanted to kill me in that interview room.
I did. Randy Stetz is in jail.
I told you I'd write an ending they'd like. You were too wrapped up in the details.
The details. He's innocent.
No, he isn't. He beat Kay. One day he'd do something worse, maybe a lot worse.
Ellie gazes up at the woods and hills and starts to climb back. Then she stops and stares. Lodged in the rocks is a small brass cartridge case.
How'd you know I planted a gun?
You wanted to help me even before I showed you that tape recorder. You had to have a wild card. You're a good man. I know that, even if you've forgotten it. When were you going to point them at me, Will? When you found out where Kay's dress was, huh? Where I took the body, right? If you have a gun and the forensics, it wouldn't matter what kind of crazy bullshit I told them about you killing your partner, would it?
Finch smiles up at Dormer, standing over him. Ellie bends down and carefully picks up the case in a white tissue. She stands wiping the case gently and examining it, frowning. Dormer stretches out a hand to Finch. Finch gives it to Dormer, who unwinds some, then slings it towards the lake. He turns fast and pulls Finch to him by the lapels.
Did you make other copies?
What?
Did you make other copies?
Why would I?
Stop me from turning you in. We're killing you.
I have a hold over you, Will. I never did. You made your own choices. It's like I wasn't even here. Why kill me? I'm not going to help Randy. After your little scene at the police department, it's not going to do you any good if I show up dead.
A lot of ways a man can die.
Like an accident, huh? Like Hap. Like Kay.
It took you 10 minutes to beat Kate Connell to death. 10 fucking minutes. You calling that an accident?
It took you only a fraction of a second to kill your partner. Does that make it any more of an accident, Will?
Dormer grips Finch firmly with one hand.
Is this an accident?
Pulls a gun, presses it to Finch's cheek.
If you want it to be.
Dormer lowers the pistol slightly and pushes it into the corner of Finch's jaw. He stares at Finch, whose lips compress into a thin downward arc. Dormer's face relaxes. He lowers the gun and starts to move away from Finch.
It's over, Walt. It's over. Come on, tell him everything.
What?
Tell him about Hap, about you, about everything.
What good would that do, Will?
It'll end this fucking thing.
It's not gonna end it. You haven't had any sleep. You're not thinking straight, Will. What are you gonna do, tell them the truth? You shot your partner. And you lied about it, Will. To them, you're a liar and you're a killer.
You're tainted forever. You don't get to pick when you tell the truth.
The truth is beyond that. That tape was the only physical proof that you and I ever had a conversation outside of that interview room. To them, I'm just a writer that Kay Connell admired. And Randy Stetz is a killer. And you're a hero cop. Your life's work is intact. Another abusive scumbag is in jail. Everything is as it should be.
We're back to Los Angeles, Will. The case against Randy's pretty solid. I can take care of everything up here. I got it all worked out. Go home.
Finch turns his back on Dormer and walks to his brown and beige estate car.
Midnight of your sixth night. You broke my record, Will.
In the same spot where Finch was sitting earlier, Dormer is now slumped, his eyelids drooping, mouth sagging open. Ellie rushes up some stairs and into a room where she hauls open the bottom drawer of a filing cabinet and flicks through a file marked Securing the Crime Scene, The Leland Street Murders by Eleanor P. Burr. She runs a finger down a page headed Synopsis until she reaches a sentence which starts, Dormer pulled a backup weapon, a Walther 9mm. She looks up slowly. Dormer's in a bar with other cops.
Randy's dead.
He was an asshole.
Didn't you know him when he was a little kid?
Dads were on the same boat. Just away from together.
Bad seed, man.
How do you like our beer?
A young curly-headed cop looks at Dormer, who turns his head slowly as if he can't understand.
I think Dormer needs is a little shut-eye.
Wait, night's getting dim.
Hasn't been easy.
Better than winter.
You got that right. In winter, the sun barely comes up for 5 months straight.
They're being sucked into a black hole, you know.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Nancy Drew.
Here?
What's up?
You got him?
Yeah.
Rich found the gun.
I heard.
Ellie pulls a plastic bag from her jacket pocket.
Nancy's got something on her mind.
I found this out on the beach.
What is it?
Shell casing, 9mm.
Dormer looks up.
The murder weapon was a .38, and none of his carries a 9mm duty weapon. Or backup weapon, right?
Dormer blinks tiredly.
Come on.
Get a hobby, would you?
Oh, shit.
Well, it's a legitimate point, isn't it, Detective Dormer?
Dormer takes a long pull from a bottle of beer.
Oh, this case is closed, Ellie. Well, the fort, boys, I'm just gonna go find a men's room. Relieve myself of some of your fine Alaskan beer.
And you want a beer or something?
Ellie watches Dormer go.
Oh, thanks.
Dormer glances back at her.
It's good people. Well, hey, Farrell, what has two thumbs and loves blowjobs?
I don't know.
This guy.
Sorry. A frowning Ellie joins Duger and Dormer outside.
Hey, right
home. Well, it's been something, Dormer.
Ellie hugs Dormer.
It's been really great working with you.
Holding him tight, she feels the pistol under the back of his jacket.
Will the airport?
No, I gotta go pick up those letters from Finch.
He lives in Cumulet, right?
At his lake house, so Detective Dormer will just have to, leave my car at the dock, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, it's fine.
Ellie nods and goes, watched by Dormer.
Well, I don't think I tried to tell her that. It's
been a pleasure.
Get some sleep.
Dormer nods, unsmiling, and walks away. In his motel room, Dormer lays some shirts in a suit carrier. He grabs the front of one, inspecting it. The red stain seeps through white wool. He covers the shirts, puts the pistol from under his jacket, looks at it, tucks it in the bag. He glances over his shoulder. From the armchair in deep shadow, Hap is watching him. Hap turns his head away. Dormer continues packing. He picks up a piece of paper, unfolds it. It's the photo of Finch. He rips it up, bins it, picks up the torn photo of Kay and gazes at it, sees a flash of a happy laughing girl, turns away and picks up his bag, now closed and folded. He carries it round the bed and places it on the floor by a table. He slips off his jacket. There are flashes of an eye, of Hap's dying face, of red liquid dripping from a pipette. Dormer undoes his tie, puts his hands over his face. Dormer drags a table in front of the window, stacks bedding, a floor rug and cushions on top of it, blacking out the orange glow coming through the blind.
Detective Dormer.
Blearily, Dormer opens the door.
What is it?
Someone's complaining about the noise. Says he can't sleep. Something wrong?
Well, it's so fucking bright in here.
The woman steps into the room.
Yeah.
No, it's dark in here.
She switches on the light. Dormer blinks in the brilliance of it.
Please.
She switches it off. Ellie is sitting motionless in her car. She blinks and looks outside. She's parked in front of the motel. Inside, Dormer's sitting on the bed while the woman unloads the table.
There's this guy, Wayne Dobbs, 24, works part-time in a copy store. Every day he watches this 8-year-old boy waiting for his carpool across the street.
This is one of your cases?
Yeah, happened to me a year and a half ago. For 6 months, he watches this kid. Finally gets up the nerve, he goes down there, grabs that boy before the carpool comes, takes him back to his apartment, and keeps him there for 3 days. He tortures him and makes him do things. And finally, he's had enough. He gets a rope and he hangs the boy in a storage space in the basement of the building. But he didn't do it right. Little boy's neck didn't break, so he just dangled there for a while and then died finally from the shock. Landlord found the body 5 days later. The second I met this guy Dobbs, I knew he was guilty. That's what I do. That's my job. I assign guilt. You find the evidence, figure out who did it, and then you go get him and put him away. This time there wasn't enough evidence, see? And it's reasonable doubt to a jury, because a jury never met a child murderer before, but I have.
Red liquid seeps through white wool.
Anyway.
Red liquid drips from a pipette.
I went and took some blood samples from the boy's dead body.
He drips blood from the pipette onto the cuff of a white shirt.
And I planted him.
In flashback, he's wearing white surgical gloves.
In Dobbs's apartment.
His gloved thumb rubs the blood into the shirt cuff, then he looks up grimly.
I could feel it right there. This is gonna catch up with me. I don't do things like that.
So how did it catch up with you?
Internal affairs is coming down on our department, and Hap, he was gonna cut a deal and bring me straight into it. They would have reopened Dobbs's case, and he'd have walked. Now that's not gonna happen. I don't know how I feel about that. But Dobbs was guilty. Dobbs needed to be convicted. So the end justifies the means.
She watches him clasping a pillow across her midriff.
Right.
She raises her eyebrows, turns away, and puts down the pillow.
I'm in no position to judge.
Why not?
There are two kinds of people who live in Alaska. The ones who were born here, and the ones who come here to escape something else. I wasn't born here.
Well, why don't you tell me what you think? Here, now, in this room, you and me. Please.
I guess it's about what you thought was right at the time.
Head on one side, she looks him in the eye.
Then what you're willing to live with.
They gaze at each other. He nods very slightly, eyelids drooping. In the car, Ellie holds up the small plastic bag, staring at the cartridge case. Her eyes flicker towards the motel and she puts it down. The car moves off. Dormer holds his fingers under a tap at the wash basin and presses them against his eyelids. He turns off the tap and stares into the mirror before going back into the bedroom, where the woman is lying on her side on the bed, apparently asleep. He looks down at her, his shadow falling across her face. Slowly and deliberately, he picks up his police shield. He turns and his shadow moves away from her. He's driving the grey car, his face set and calm. Ellie glances down to check a notepad. Her blue police vehicle takes a long left curve on a road bordered with lush green scrub. Dormer walks along the hall to Finch's apartment, gun in hand, stops in front of the door and kicks. He checks books in one case, gun still in hand, moves to another case and starts flipping books out and picks one up. Otherwise engaged by Walter Finch, he slaps it onto a table. Ellie heads towards a lake, a long white glacier running into it from the left, a black hill on the far side. Dormer opens the back cover of the book, sees a photo with the caption, Walter Finch at his summer house on Lake Kagan. He takes a letter from a pile. It's addressed to Kay Connell. He picks up the phone and dials.
Nightmute Police Department.
Detective Burr.
She's not here right now. She left about 20 minutes ago to go pick up
the... Dormer goes. Ellie slows down. At the end of the road stands a log cabin right on the edge of a lake. Ellie stops behind Finch's brown and beige estate car. A long, frothing white waterfall tumbles into the river running beside the road Dormer's on. He rubs his eyes with the back of his hand. Between towering mountains, the car looks like a toy. Ellie crosses duckboards towards the cabin.
Finch!
Detective Burr!
Are they friendly?
Oh, yeah. Didn't expect to see you this soon. Sorry about the mess. Just doing a little work here.
Oh, no problem.
The grey car speeds past a lake and up a hill. Dormer's blinking hard. The wipers smear the windscreen, and Dormer rubs his eyes again as the tarmac rushes past. Inside the cabin, Finch takes off his coat.
Do you think Kay's letters could really strengthen the case against Randy?
Possibly.
In the car, Dormer struggles to keep his eyes open. Outside, wipers, the raindrops on the windscreen, and the brilliant green of the surrounding hills become blurred and confused. Dormer frowns and scowls with concentration. Suddenly, he sees nothing but raindrops. The car slews across the road, spinning right round, coming to rest half on, half off the road, a deep ditch in front. Dormer stares at the steep descent ahead of him and the hill behind. He drops his head and closes his eyes.
Watch your head here.
Not a thousand times.
Finch precedes Ellie into a dark and tidy room with a desk. She looks around as he opens and shuts drawers.
Sorry about all the clutter.
I am a pack rat.
Keep everything.
One large drawer he leaves open.
I know I got them, just don't know where.
Ellie stares at red paisley material in a plastic bag.
Got to be here somewhere.
Working on a new book, Mr. Finch?
Have you read any of my books?
I haven't.
As she turns, gripping her gun, Finch hits her on the jaw and she falls. Dormer's driving along the lakeshore past the blue-white glacier, eyes narrowed in concentration. Finch drags Ellie away as Dormer stops beside Ellie's car. Finch lays Ellie down while Dormer, carrying a gun, walks towards the cabin. Dormer crosses the duckboards and climbs the steps to the cabin. Inside, Finch looks up. Dormer pauses at the door, sidles inside, gun gripped in both hands, back flat to the wall. He moves cautiously around the room. Finch appears at the door, hands up.
She knows, Will.
Where is she?
She knows you killed Hap. You would have realized it yourself if you weren't so fucking strung out. I saw it at the questioning, the way she was looking.
Where is she, Finch?
Calm down now. I got everything under control.
If anything happened to her...
She's okay. But if we don't do something and she talks, you're fucked. Everything you've worked for is destroyed. You get it?
Lying on the floor, Ellie opens her eyes.
Now, give me...
Show me where she is. Show it to me now.
She's okay. Listen, it's all fine.
Sitting up, Ellie wipes blood from her mouth and looks around her.
Let's search this place.
What are we looking for?
For the dress.
What dress?
Ellie's.
Ellie's
dress? Kay's dress.
You're rambling, Will.
Ellie's here.
You're losing it. Thank God you got me taking care of us.
Us?
She saw the dress.
What us?
We're in the same boat.
Where'd you get us?
Don't talk to me about us, you sick mother.
She's alive, Will. Ellie!
Finch darts out of the door. Dormer follows. Finch hits him with a saw and punches him to the floor. Ellie tries the door in her small dark room, then the window, while Finch kicks and punches Dormer, who fires a shot. Ellie opens the window and climbs through, while Finch, face contorted, kicks and stamps on Dormer repeatedly. Ellie's on the gently sloping roof. Dormer stretches for his gun, but Finch kicks it away. Ellie drops down from the roof and opens the door behind Finch, who's still kicking Dormer. Finch sprints out of the door. Dormer sits up.
Don't move. You shot Detective Eckhart.
Finch is running around the outside of the cabin.
And Finch saw you do it.
Finch runs into a smaller neighboring cabin.
Did you mean to shoot Hap?
I don't know anymore. I don't know.
Finch grabs a shotgun and empties a box of cartridges.
I couldn't see him through the fog, but when I got up close... He was afraid of me, and he thought I meant to do it, so maybe I did. I just don't know anymore.
Ellie frowns uncertainly as Dormer looks up at her. They both dive flat on the floor. While Finch reloads, Ellie shoves the gun across to Dormer, who crawls to beneath the window nearest Finch's cabin.
Where's your gun?
He took it.
Dormer can see water a few feet below the floorboards. He beckons Ellie.
Keep your head down. Now listen, I got 7 rounds in this clip. Make it last. Head down.
He rolls away from the window.
Go!
Ellie smashes the glass in her window while Dormer breaks some floorboards. As Ellie starts firing, he drops through the floor to the shin-high water beneath. While Ellie and Finch exchange fire above, Dormer is wading through the water under the decking which joins the two cabins out of sight of Finch. Under Finch's cabin, Dormer looks up. While Finch reloads, Dormer is climbing a ladder which brings him into the cabin behind Finch, who's preparing to fire again. Dormer hurls himself at Finch just as he turns. Locked together, they reel across the room, fighting viciously, with Dormer getting the better of it until Finch grabs a bottle and smashes it across his head. Dormer recovers, knocks Finch down and turns to grab the shotgun. When he turns back, Finch is holding a pistol.
Forgot the wild card, Will.
Finch is thrown backwards by the blast of the shotgun. Dormer staggers back against the wall, his face racked with shock and pain. Finch looks down at the wound in his belly, looks up, face twisting, and Dormer watches him fall back into the water. Dormer staggers across the room. Finch's body slowly rises up towards the thin layer of bubbles on the surface, then stops, suspended just under the water, eyes open, arms extended, blood on his chin and lower lip from the fight with Dormer, who stares down as the face and the check shirt very gently sink into the black water. Dormer glances down at his own wound. When he looks back into the water, Finch has gone. He looks round, stumbles to the door and pushes it open. In the daylight, his face is gaunt and grey, his eyes empty. Dragging the shotgun, he lurches outside, then lets it fall. He sinks to his knees, sways, and falls backwards.
Did you take a Dormer?
Ellie races to him and kneels down to put her padded jacket over him.
I called for backup. They'll be here soon. Dormer, just hold on.
She stares down at him, frowning, and pulls out the plastic bag with the cartridge case from her pocket. She holds it close to him, stroking his hair with her other hand.
Nobody needs to know.
He watches her long fingers pull the case from the bag and prepare to throw it into the lake.
He didn't mean to do it, and I know that, even if you don't.
He grabs her arm.
No, don't.
What? Why?
She holds his head.
Don't lose your way.
He looks into her eyes, and her uncertain expression turns fearful. His eyes lose contact with hers.
Dormer.
His lids flicker downwards.
Let me sleep.
His head rolls sideways.
Just let me sleep.
His face relaxes, eyes closed. She lifts her hand from his head. She's holding the empty plastic bag, still leaning over him, silhouetted in her black sleeveless top against the blue-white glacier. She looks down into his calm face. Slowly, she kneels up, not taking her eyes from his face, until she opens the fingers of her other hand. The cartridge case is lying there. She rolls it with her thumb, looks back at Dormer, and puts the case back in the bag. She stands looking down at him sorrowfully, then gazes round at the cabin, the waterfall beyond it, the majestic mountain, and the calm lake. She looks down again at the small, still figure of Dormer. The screen fades to black. Audio description written by Peter Wickham. Read by Becky Hindley. Studio engineer Dominic Shanks. Associate producer Stephen P. Wegner. Production manager Wendy S. Williams. First Assistant Director, Vincent Lascombes. Second Assistant Director, David K. Arnold. Canadian Casting, Lynn Caro, CSA, Susan Browse. Costume Designer, Tish Monahan. Associate Producer, Ben Cosgrove. Production Executive, Derek Guiley. Cast in order of appearance: Will Dormer, Al Pacino. Hap Eckhart, Martin Donovan. Pilot, Oliver Olay Zeman. Ellie Burr, Hilary Swank. Chief Nyback, Paul Dooley. Fred Duger, Nicky Catt. Farrell, Larry Holden. Francis, Jay Brazo. Rich, Lorne Cardinal. Officer Number 1, James Hudson. Officer Number 2, Andrew Campbell. Coroner, Paula Shaw. Kay Connell, Crystal Lowe. Mrs. Connell, Tasha Sims. Rachel Clement, owner of the motel, Maura Tierney. Randy Stetz, Jonathan Jackson. School Principal, Malcolm Boddington. Tanya Frank, Catherine Isabel. Walter Finch, Robin Williams. Trish Eckhart, Kerry Sandomirsky. Uniformed Officer, Chris Guthior. Warfield, Ian Tracy. Woman on the Road, Kate Robbins. Girl at Funeral, Emily Jane Perkins. Ticket Taker, Dean Ray. Stunt Coordinator, Ken Kurzinger. Mr. Pacino's Stunt Double, Lauro Chartrand. Mr. Pacino's Stunt Double, Sean C. Orr. Mr. Williams' Stunt Double, Mike Mitchell. Ms. Swank's Stunt Double, Yvette Jackson. Mr. Donovan's Stunt Double, Kit Mallett. Additional Stunt Players, Rick Burgess, Marshall Virtue, Duane Dickinson, Eve Cameron, Christine Kenwood, Ron James, Dean Cho, Jacob Rupp. Based on the film Insomnia, directed by Eric Skjulbor, written by Nikolai Frobenius and Eric Skjulbor. Post-production supervisor, Brad Arensman. Supervising sound editors, Aaron Glasscock, Kurt Schulke. Underwater director of photography, Pete Romano. Still photographer, Rob McEwen. Computer playback, West Media Film and Post. Script supervisor, Kelly Moon. Sound mixer, Larry Sutton, CAS. Art director, Michael Diner. Assistant art director, Peter Stratford. Key grip, Kimberly T. Olson. Best boy grip, Dan Gorville. Dolly grip, Ryan Munro. Gaffer, Drew Davidson. Best boy electrics, Steve Vincent. Casting associate, Los Angeles, Jamie Sparer. Casting assistant, Canada, Angela Hamray. Extras casting, Stephanie Boeck. Marine coordinator, Dan Crosby. Special effects coordinator, Randy Shimke. Animal trainer, Paul Jasper. Re-recorded at Todd Studios West. Sound editorial services, Weddington Productions. Voice casting, The Background. ADR recording, Sharp Sound Studios, Inc., Tattersall, Casablanca. Electronic programming, David Julian. Music orchestrated by Martin Harry. Music conducted by Nick Ingman. Music recorded at Sony Studios, London. Music mixed at Air Studios, London. Main title sequence designed by Dan Perry. Title compositing, BIPAC, Inc. Opticals, Pacific Title. Color timer, Kenny Becker. Negative cutting, The Real Masters. Sparks. Written by Guy Berryman, John Buckland, Will Champion, Chris Martin. Performed by Coldplay, courtesy of EMI Records Limited. Under license from EMI Capital Music Special Markets. Don't Wait for the Sun, written by Stacey Jones. Performed by American Hi-Fi, courtesy of Island Records. Under license from Universal Music Enterprises. One More Last Kiss, written by Adam Schlesinger, Dominique Durand, and Andy Chase. Performed by Ivy, courtesy of Network America. Thinking About You, written and performed by Danny Gill and Curtis Skelton, courtesy of MasterSource. Gripen Electric gear supplied by William F. White Limited. Filmed with Panavision. Spacecam aerial camera system provided by Spacecam Systems Incorporated. Float plane supplied by Vancouver Island Air and Sea. Dailies by Alpha Cine. Color by Deluxe. Los Angeles Times copyright 2001, Los Angeles Times, reprinted by permission. American Humane Association monitored the animal action. No animal was harmed in the making of this film. Filmed on location in Vancouver, Squamish, Port Albany, and Stewart, British Columbia, Canada, with additional aerial photography in Alaska. Copyright 2002 Insomnia Productions LP. All characters depicted, names used, and incidents portrayed in this film are fictitious. No identification with actual persons is intended nor should be inferred. Any resemblance of the characters portrayed to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States of America, Canada, and other countries. Any unauthorized exhibition, distribution, or reproduction of this motion picture or videotape or any part thereof, including the soundtrack, may result in severe liability and criminal penalties. Insomnia. International sales and distribution by Summit Entertainment.